Welcome to That's a Dive, everyone. I'm Kyle Martino. I've got PJ here with me, and wow, this is going to be a sad one. I'm just going to forget topics, forget reviews, although I love you guys. Thanks for the reviews coming, but it's just not the day for it. I mean, this is the saddest day in U.S. soccer history, and I tweeted it last night, PJ, and it took off, and I didn't really think about it. I just said it because that's what I felt, and I think it took off because everyone feels the same way. I mean, this is the lowest point because of what the World Cup means, the wind in U.S. soccer's sail, the progress, the momentum. It feels like it all just fell apart, and we're going to try to talk about it right now, and obviously do a bit of an obituary about last game, the Hex, and going maybe a little bit further than that, and then trying to find a positive outlook on where things are going for U.S. soccer. But I just, you know, we had Michael Bradley on in a great interview before the Panama game, right? And he said, we've been here before. And listen, you know, Trinidad and Tobago, yeah, we'd been there before with the you know, famous Caligiuri goal. And we'd been in these situations before where qualification was hanging by a thread. But many feel we shouldn't be there anymore. Now, we could get into the challenges of qualifying for a World Cup in CONCACAF and the big debate going on about, you know, European teams and are there more difficult ways out there, or how does it compare to the U.S. Trying to get out of the Hex and trying to get to a World Cup? But let's just not do that right now, not for this pod. Right now, we need to talk about the fact that we can all agree the U.S. should be in a World Cup. For the first time since 1986, the United States will not be represented in the biggest sporting event in the world, and that sucks. That is going to affect this game in many ways, myriad ways that are hard to measure for years to come. And it starts with, obviously, the conversation going on right now where people are very upset and there's infighting and there's division and many people not clear on how to move forward. How we move forward is by looking back and seeing where we failed. And you could look at the game, right, PJ? You look at a game against Trinidad, in Trinidad, where the U.S. greatly outpowers their team, far superior than Trinidad and Tobago. I mean, Trinidad and Tobago already out of the World Cup. I mean, just listless and struggling all the way up into the point where they're playing a game and they switch the stadium because it's clear they don't care about the game. They moved to a smaller stadium because they didn't have to spend as much to put the game on. It was done for them. Obviously, any time a team in CONCACAF faces the United States, they're going to take it seriously enough to put in some sort of performance. But the U.S. were playing for everything, and Trinidad and Tobago were playing for nothing. And Trinidad and Tobago outfought, and outworked the United States, and that's inexcusable. In the simplest way, I mean, everyone wants to know, you know, youth development and Sunil Gulati and all these things, and we'll get into those things. The U.S. shouldn't have been in a position where they needed at least a draw in their last game in the Hex against Trinidad and Tobago. But that performance was terrible. And I'm in a tough position because I've worn the jersey. I know the weight of it. I've been a part of awful moments in U.S. soccer, and this is on a much lower level, but I was a part of the group that failed to qualify for the Olympics in Athens, and that hurt. It was embarrassing. I carry it around with me today, not only selfishly because I missed that amazing opportunity to go back to the birthplace of the games and represent my country, but just embarrassing because we should have been there. We were good enough to be there. In the United States, the players embarrassed themselves and embarrassed the country with the performance that they put out there against Trinidad and Tobago. And I'm not saying anything that they haven't said. Michael Bradley, after he did a random doping test came out and said that, and you saw it in his face, that he felt he'd let the country down and the guys had let themselves down and let the country down. And they're right. They did. But I feel for them because it wasn't just one game. There's so many reasons that it got that bad, that it got to that level. And it's not all on the players. For that moment, it's easy to blame them. And I'm mad at them for the performance they put in. But I'm so sympathetic and I feel for them because I know any criticism of the players right now, the players have 20 times that amount of criticism that they're putting on themselves. I mean, 20 times the hurt, 20 times the pain, 20 times the regret, 20 times the anger that they're not going to play in that World Cup. I saw a lot of fans getting really upset at the players and just throwing out all sorts of vitriol. And I get it. You know, people are emotional right afterwards and they're upset. But I promise you, those guys, like myself, I had injuries at crucial moments where in World Cup camps, I fell out of the picture at the most crucial time. Ever since I was little in my backyard, I put on a Tab Ramos jersey. I kicked the ball against the wall of my house. My mom would come out and scream and tell me to stop. And I would do commentary for scoring a goal in the World Cup. And I did that since I was 6 or 7 years old. It was a dream of mine that I can't tell you how much it hurts. Not that I failed to qualify for a World Cup or I was a part of a group that failed, that I failed to get onto that stage. It pains me every single day. So imagine the pain that these guys are feeling right now. And I just hope fans will give them that moment. And it's not mutually exclusive. You can be mad at them, as I am. You can be mad at them for the performance they put out there against Trinidad and Tobago. It wasn't good enough on a day where they needed to be, not at their best, but needed to be much better than mediocre, and they were mediocre. But just feel for them for a second, because their dreams died for a lot of those guys. For a lot of those guys, that was their only opportunity to make it to a World Cup. For young guys like Christian Pulisic, it was a time to thrive as a teenager and go to the biggest sporting event in the world. And now we'll have to wait until he's 24 at a minimum, if the United States make the next World Cup. But just feel for the guys for a second. And you can still have your anger, because you should. That performance was not good enough. And then, of course, the perfect storm happens, right? Right when the United States don't put together their best performance. The reason they had a 90% chance of qualifying was not only are they better than Trinidad and Tobago and should be able to get a point there, but Honduras and Panama had much more difficult games. Even if they were at home, those were difficult games. Even if they were against teams that are already qualified, those were much more difficult games. You know, a phantom goal for Panama and just all of it, right? All of it going and aligning in the most negative possible way means that we're in the lowest point in U.S. soccer history. So we could sit here and dissect Bruce Arena's decisions, which, by the way, he made many poor ones, to go to Trinidad and Tobago and divert from what he's been using in qualifying, which is a group for home, a group for away, two different groups, keep it fresh, two different ideas. The fact that he stuck with the same group that played in a totally different game, in a totally different scenario a few days earlier against Panama, to go down to Trinidad and Tobago was a massive, massive error by a very experienced coach who I still hold in high regard, who I don't think he did deliver the highest moment. Even if he's a part of the lowest, he delivered the highest moment in U.S. soccer history in 2002 with that run in the World Cup. But to go down there in a game that's not going to be about putting the ball on the ground, that's not going to be about fluidity and formations, it's going to be about fight. To play guys that have been error-prone recently, to play guys that are going to be a little bit tired, to play guys like Pulisic that are not luxuries, but sort of creative weapons when the game goes a certain way, but then are guys that can fade out when they're targeted on a field that looks like it did and played like it did in Trinidad and Tobago. I mean, you just go down the line. Why is Michael Bradley playing alone as a holder in a game where Acosta goes next to him, save Pulisic for the end, put on Clint Dempsey, who's hungry, who's experienced? I mean, there's so many decisions to easily now go back and say, Bruce, what were you thinking? But this isn't Bruce's fault. It goes back so much further than that. And it goes up so much higher than that. It rests at Sunil Gulati. and trying to figure out how to move forward, the decision is, do you clean house altogether, or what stays and what goes? You know, and before I get to that, everyone wants to go to this sort of Klinsmann versus Arena comparison. I mean, you know, obviously this is as bad as it gets, not qualifying for a World Cup. Fifth place in a hex is as bad as we've done. Bruce Arena, the loss to Costa Rica, a big mistake at home. Obviously, a loss on the road, a big mistake in the final game. But he took over a team that was listless, that was disjointed, that was already struggling, that lost in Columbus against Mexico, where they never lose, and had put in performances, the one against Costa Rica, that looked like the towel had been thrown in well before it got to the business end of qualifying. So both of them are culpable. But this goes back even before. I mean, 2015, when it was clear things were falling apart a little bit with U.S. soccer, and Klinsmann was still riding a wave of sort of quote-unquote getting out of the group of death, although we could dissect that all day long to prove that that's not really what happened. And also a performance against Belgium where it was clear how far we had to go, where Tim Howard makes 16 saves. But even before that, Sunil Gulati giving Jurgen Klinsmann a contract extension right before the World Cup. You know, just the pursuit of Jurgen Klinsmann from Sunil Gulati was this, like, it was like a school crush, and going after him and also giving him so much to get him. And there are many things about Jurgen Klinsmann that are great. I give Jurgen Klinsmann a lot of credit for what happened with Germany when they sort of became that phoenix from the flames. And I'll talk about that German example in a second because it's a great one. But going after him the way that Sunil Gulati did, it already from the beginning, it reeked of, we were grateful that he chose us. And in doing that, gave him so much clout, so much power, more money than any coach had ever been given before. And Jurgen ruffled some feathers and asked some good questions that I think U.S. soccer needed to hear, some criticisms it needed to hear. So it's not all bad. I think many parts of the Jurgen Klinsmann era brought about positive change, and also some of the better performances we saw, especially in some of those friendlies against European teams. But to give him an extension and the technical director title before the measuring stick of a World Cup, that's the ultimate measuring stick, the only really important measuring stick, was the biggest example for me of Sunil Gulati starting to hurt U.S. soccer more than he was helping it. And listen, Sunil Gulati's he's helped U.S. soccer in a lot of ways. I'm not going to be one of these people that are going to jump on and just rip him and say this is all his fault, because it's not. Behind the scenes, Sunil Gulati has done much to make U.S. soccer, and sort of you conflate MLS with that as well, because there is a synergy there, to make them stable, to make them profitable. But at a certain point, the balance got off, right? Where it became a business where the money-making outweighed the development of players and the overall success on the field and execution in terms of building towards being a better national team. And it caught up with U.S. soccer. It's caught up with Jurgen Klinsmann. And although there have been good things done at the youth levels, and there have been academies, there have been full-time coaches and more players in the youth national team structure than have ever been there before, a lot of those things aren't good enough, fast enough to overcome the mistakes from the top down. And, you know, Sunil Gulati's been there past a decade now, unchallenged. His authority and his power is unchecked, and it needs to be. Someone needs to come in with fresh ideas. Someone needs to take the reins from Sunil Gulati. And we need to thank Sunil Gulati for his service, because he has done a lot of great things for U.S. soccer, but say now is not the time for you. Now is the time for someone new. And, you know, I look at one specific thing recently. Like, guys want to blame everyone, the players for Trinidad, and also blame the players fairly, because they're culpable for being in a position where they had to get a result in the Trinidad and Tobago game. But I just look, and we talked about it on the podcast, one specific instance that fully encapsulates my issue with Sunil Gulati right now, is the game at Red Bull Arena was a massive mistake. The game at Red Bull Arena against Costa Rica in an enormous must-win, because every home qualifier is a must-win. That's how you get out of the hex. To play Costa Rica in a part of the country that is most populated with Costa Ricans, Americans with Costa Rican heritage, fans that were going to come out and make the game as comfortable and as enjoyable for that Costa Rica team as it could possibly be, more comfortable than any other stadium in any other part of the country. And by the way, Brian Ruiz and the players said it in the mix zone afterwards. We felt great. That was amazing. And you saw it in the way they played. That was a money-making decision. That was not a let's get to the World Cup decision. And that was a huge mistake. And all of these things have been overlooked because the U.S.'s, our ability and the talent has always overcome the errors in the way things are built, the systemic issues with soccer in this country. So for me, the first thing we have to do in moving forward is look at ourselves and understand where we've gone wrong, the mistakes. And when we're all in this, myself included, as a former player and a guy with a microphone who's in the game now as a pundit, who has a voice, I need to hold the people accountable that should be held accountable, but I also need to understand where sometimes I'm wrong, you know? And my issues with Jurgen Klinsmann, you know, although some of them were prescient, and my issues with, I thought Jurgen wasn't the guy to execute a philosophy. He was a guy to show you a vision, and then you need a number two. And he had that at Yogi Love, with Yogi Love, who has now been an excellent number one and proved he was sort of the mind behind things. And this isn't, honestly, this isn't me just looking from the outside trying to pick things apart. This is me, honestly, talking to many players, whether it be U.S. players or players that have played for him at Bayern Munich, players that know him very well, players that played with him, and obviously reading from Philipp Lahm and other people's accounts of the way things went. You know, Jurgen Klinsmann had the wrong guy trying to execute things for him in Martin Vazquez. And I had mentioned that, and it brought me a lot of criticism. And then in hindsight, down the road, Jurgen Klinsmann acknowledged that himself and replaced him right before a World Cup. So there are moments where I want to speak out and hold people accountable, and I do. But there are also moments where I'm too critical of guys like Jurgen Klinsmann, where there were things he was doing that were great, and maybe I'm giving too much leeway and too many excuses for guys like Bruce Arena, who I've played with and I trust. I mean, the fact of the matter is both of them have made massive errors. But I don't care if you put Pep Guardiola in that position. From top to bottom, U.S. soccer has to look at itself and figure out why a country of 330 million people fails to get to a World Cup when a country of 330,000 people, Iceland, are going. And listen, some of those answers we can't solve. Some of them are cultural issues. But some of them we can, and we have to identify them. And that's step one, PJ. Step one is to look at what's going on and look at the mistakes that are being made and figure out what needs to be done. Who needs to go and who needs to be brought in, and how does the structure need to be tweaked in order to stop having players slip through the cracks, stop having players fail to develop that have promise at a young age but don't end up in the national team picture, and figure out how to ensure that the progress towards being the type of team identity-wise doesn't come at the cost of missing out on opportunities to learn and improve, i.e. World Cups, Confederation Cups, and youth tournaments, which is another big part of this.
You pretty much covered everything there that's just so disappointing about this. The high that everybody was feeling on Friday after Panama is obviously the complete opposite. I mean, we all, you know, people were joking we're going to make a run at the whole World Cup and everything like that, and obviously that's a bit exaggerated, but it seems like the players felt like they were already in after that win. Mm-hmm. And the way they came out last night sort of suggested that they were lacking that urgency, and that's what was disappointing to see, especially in the first half. You saw a little bit more in the second half, especially when Clint Dempsey came in, who I thought was probably the best player in the second half, mm-hmm. Just with some of the chances he tried to help create. But, I mean, it's very hard to watch that as a fan. But like you said, last night wasn't the only time. You know, it cost Klinsmann's job, too, with that Costa Rica match where they put in a similar performance, and they just were completely outplayed and run off the field. And same thing the game before that against Mexico, where they lost at home. So it seems like there's a bigger issue than who's the manager, who's the president.
Definitely.
And that's why it's kind of baffling, because I don't know if anybody knows what the answers are. And it's like you're saying, it's going to be a long process and a long look in the mirror by everybody to kind of figure out what we need to do here.
We're wasting our time if we're focusing on which coach to blame. Which coach should we have gotten in? What are the mistakes these coaches made? And they have made mistakes, and you can pick those apart. But it's not Jurgen Klinsmann's fault. Well, in a way, because he was the technical director, I guess you could make that argument that it is. And it's not Bruce Arena's fault that youth tournaments, right? And I mentioned mine, the Olympics. I missed out on that, and we failed to qualify not only in 2004, but 2012, 2006, three of the last four.
2016.
2013 under 17 World Cup, 2011 under 20 World Cup. I mean, those tournaments, you can't underestimate the importance of the pipeline of players coming up to the first team, giving them that tournament experience and games that matter, and blooding them so they're ready when it counts in World Cup qualifying and in World Cups. And so you can't blame Bruce Arena for the fact that a lot of the guys in this group missed those opportunities. And a lot of guys are missing out on club playing opportunities. A lot of guys missed out on getting into a good structured coaching environment opportunity. So it's a grassroots systemic issue of why aren't guys more prepared by the time the first team gets their hands on them. That's the big issue, and that's where the focus needs to go, is not who's the guy to coach them once they get there, how to make sure there are more players and these players are more prepared for what it takes at the highest level once they get that opportunity. And a guy that knows a lot about this, and not only about getting to the top level, about playing in qualification, about this country and the challenges we face as a soccer nation, he's a guy that also knows how it feels to miss out on a World Cup. So I need to bring him in right now to commiserate with me, but I also want to hear my good buddy Robbie Earle's opinions on what's going on with the U.S. right now and what needs to change. So Robbie Earle, let's bring you in right now. All right, Earle, help me, man. I'm having a tough morning here.
Yeah. Come, breathe heavy. Get okay. The smelling salts. It'll all come good. I knew we'd start on this position, so I want to give you a positive.
Please.
Let's look for one positive.
Yes.
We were one goal possibly away last night from the U.S. men's national team, even drawing. Mm-hmm. At maybe not having some serious conversations that need to be had about American football. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, isn't that a good thing that, you know what, nothing's been cracked, the cracks haven't been papered over, yeah. that we're not brushing things under the carpet, that we're not moving on in that kind of false guise that everything's okay? Because obviously everything isn't okay. If you need to go to Trinidad and Tobago to win a game, to guarantee yourself in a World Cup final place, and that doesn't happen, then it's time to look at the whole structure and why a country like Iceland, it's one of the smallest states possibly in the U.S.
330,000 people.
There you go. Can qualify for European Championships and World Cups, and the U.S. are struggling along in an area of world football where it's destined really for Mexico and the U.S. Mm-hmm. by all means to make it through to World Cup finals.
Yeah. Oh, Earle, I'm glad I brought you on. You always have that gift of positivity and bringing me out of darkness. So yes, you're absolutely right. This is a conversation that wouldn't have happened probably. What would have been easy, and I may have been someone that contributed to this narrative, it would have been easy to say Bruce Arena comes in as the savior and he fixes things. Okay, here we go. We're back on track. That wouldn't have been the case even if they got that goal. I totally agree with you. So you're absolutely right. If, right? I mean, this is the big if. if the right questions are asked,
yeah,
the right people are removed, and the right people are put in place. That's the big issue, because in the noise, right, after a big drop-off like this, the lowest moment in U.S. soccer history, and I don't think that's hyperbolic, it's hard to cut through the noise to get to resolution, to get to solution. So I'm really interested to hear your take on, not only from a fan perspective, right, of like how much it hurts to not have your team at a World Cup, but in the aftermath of England failing to qualify for big tournaments, you know, World Cup and Euros, what was that like? And did you see, did you see resolution? Did you see the right conversations happening?
It's a really good point. And the first thing I want to say, Kyle, is that this doesn't just hurt USA fans, you know, who are born in this country. This hurts anybody who likes the sport in this country. This hurts an Englishman who's played for Jamaica, who's now working in this sport. Because what we're here to do, what we want to do, and we work on the Premier League with NBC, but we watch all the football products, we watch all the other competitions. We want to see the game grow in this country. That's the reason that we're here. That's the reason we're
goal number one.
We get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we can't wait to get in that studio and tell the stories, get more people engaged, get more people watching this great game that we know. And so I think that's important to say that it's not just the USA fan or people born in America who hurt. I think it's anybody associated with football in this country who feels the problem. And I think that the one thing I think I'd have to say from this point, and it happened in England some years back when England didn't qualify for World Cups in European Championships, that the first thing that happens is hysteria. I mean, everybody comes with every plan, with every ripping it up and starting again and root and branch and all that. You almost need a time of calm now, a little bit of, okay, it's happened. Let's accept the realization. And sometimes moving forward, it actually would benefit, and I've said this in England when I worked a little bit with the FA as well, it would almost benefit an independent group coming in, looking at the situation and starting to dissect what's good, what works, what doesn't, who should be having what conversations. Because if only the people who are involved in the product at the moment are having those conversations, some of those people don't want to have the conversations that are embarrassing, that hurtful, that actually point the finger, that they ask the real questions that need to be asked. And so sometimes somebody independent who's not attached to anybody, who's looking for the good of the and the growth of the game, it could be beneficial to look for some kind of steering group with the right level of people, majority American, but you may want some outside people who are not born in this country but have a love for the game and want to see the game grow in the same way, to start those conversations off and have some of those difficult conversations that need to be had.
Yeah, and I liken it to the CEO that's afraid to bring in a consultant for fear of being exposed for not being good enough at his job. And all of a sudden, you've brought in outside counsel that brings it to everyone's attention that things are not operating as they should. I promise you there are people within U.S. soccer that don't want that microscope. And I also promise you an outside independent counsel will find those cracks and find those mistakes. That's not to say they don't exist with every federation. Obviously, no one's perfect. But I think of Germany, right? That's the example I was just talking to PJ about earlier, is that Germany, right, 1998, they go out against Croatia in the World Cup, and it's devastating for a team that consistently gets to the later stages of a World Cup, but devastating because behind the scenes there was a fight going on with the FA and those voices that we're talking about, where people were saying, listen, we have to focus on the youth. We're missing a lot of players. They're not being developed the right way. The coordination of our league, the Bundesliga, DFB and FA and club, so to speak, is disjointed. They're not pulling in the right direction. All of a sudden, 98 happens, and what wasn't okay before, finally they said, okay, you're right. We're going to put the money towards skilled training at the youth level and coaches and development. Every club has to have, every Bundesliga club has to have this organization in place. We're holding people to a higher standard. And what happens is a 10-year build towards a team that not only becomes a powerhouse again, but does so with youth and flair. And, you know, the Mario Götzes and the Mesut Özils and all of these players come out of this revolution, a phoenix from the flames. That can happen here.
Who were young 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old players at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a system in place. There was a structure in place. There was a platform. There was coaching education so that these kids at the right age were being taught the right thing. And they were given promotion into under 20, U18s, under 21s, into the first national team. And they were given opportunity. Those group of players have grown up in the last 10 years and now look, you know, can put out three teams, to be honest, that would qualify through the hex. I know Bruce Arena said, you know, some of these hotshot European teams, the Germany could put their third team out and they would qualify through the hex. That's at what depth of quality they've got. And I think you really bring up a good point there. And it's actually very, it's very relevant to England as well, is that when the national team fails, it's a reflection on the governing body and it's a reflection on the leagues in which it plays. Mm-hmm. So the MLS and US soccer, and even when we're going down to USL now, the teams who want to get into mm-hmm. MLS and come through, it's reflective on all those things. So it's so important that all these bodies and these organisations start to work together for the betterment of the game. It's not because the US national team that MLS now sitting there and going, well, the national team, see, they're not as good as they thought. Because people around the world, my friends in England, straight away have, when they think of US soccer, they don't necessarily always think of the national team. They think of MLS. And then the conversations back in pubs in places around the world will be, the MLS isn't as you think. Look, they can't even qualify for mm-hmm. World Cups from there. So we need some joined up thinking between the organisations so that people start to realise that a win for the US is a win for all, the national team, and a loss for the US is a loss for us all, and the game's not going to grow in the same way. The other thing that I'd have to say, Kyle, and it's kind of slightly been missed in some points, is that there's a bigger argument and discussion to be had about the structure and the development and the pain to play and the people who are not in the system. And mm-hmm. those are big, deep conversations that need to be had. But let's just talk about the group of players that got on a plane from America couple of days ago, flew down to Trinidad and had to win a game in Trinidad to get to the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That group of players failed. There was enough talent, there was enough experience, there was enough of everything you would need with that group of players who've just come off a great 4-0 win against Panama to go and get the job done, and they weren't able to get it done. Now, yes, there's lots of problems underneath the structure in Sonny Galati and, mm-hmm. and Bruce Arena and all those things. But the players themselves failed mm-hmm. badly in what they needed to do.
Yeah, and before you jumped on the phone, I said that. I said, listen, I feel for the guys, and I know you do too, because a World Cup's a dream, and a dream only a small amount of players within a small percentage of players, you know what I mean? The subgroup of a subgroup get the chance to do that. And I feel for those guys because that dream's taken away from some of them, that's their only opportunity, and some that have to obviously wait a long time now for their next opportunity. You can be mad at their performance because it shouldn't have happened. They were good enough to win that game.
Yeah.
Forget that Bruce didn't change the team. Forget the field. Forget formations. None of that matters. That team on the field let the country down, let themselves down, and they know it. And that sucks, and that hurts, and that's awful. You can be upset about that while still focusing on how did it get to that point? You know what I mean? I think that's what you're saying. Like, you made a good point about MLS. You know, the irony is some people don't realize Major League Soccer, although it was built to obviously help the United States national team get better players, more experienced players, it's actually helped our competitors in CONCACAF more so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the byproducts of the MLS that people don't realize. A lot of these teams, Panama, Costa Rica, and Honduras, are better because of Major League Soccer. And maybe we're not seeing as much of the benefit. So it's closing the gap in CONCACAF. And you know CONCACAF.
Yeah,
we're not going to compare it for a second to Europe or anything like that. I think it's a silly thing to do. But you know how difficult it is to go on the road and win those games in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm not making excuses for them, but you know what that's like.
Exactly. And do you know what, Callan? I don't want to be wise after the event. And anybody who's close to me will tell you I said something yesterday before the game that worried me. And I'll tell you exactly, and you're spot on about the qualification of CONCACAF, which I went through with Jamaica in 98, which is nearly 20 years, believe it or not, since we qualified for France in 98. And that starts with the first round, the second round, the group stage, the fourth round, getting into the hex, going through the hex, going to places. So we went to Costa Rica and had to get results. We went to El Salvador, and this is one in particular, away at El Salvador. Training pitch. We start a warm-up on a field like you saw at Trinidad and Tobago. And you know you have a training pitch that's not the field, and then you're allowed it 30 minutes on the field the day before the game. So we're on the training pitch 2 days before the game. We're in El Salvador. The band have been playing all night. We've not had any sleep. All the usual. The food's not great. People are getting stomachache. All the stuff that you can go in. I remember I was an experienced professional at the time. I was early 30s. One of my roles as part of the team was not only just what I did on the field, but kind of making sure the mentality of the group was right.
Yeah.
Halfway through a training session, 2 days before a massive World Cup qualifier in El Salvador, we get rushed off the training field. From out of the skies comes a government army helicopter, drops right in the middle of our training field, end of training. I mean, 2 days before World Cup qualifier. So we go in and end up doing a little gym session. A few of the boys are getting really upset. And I remember grabbing these group of boys together and saying, listen, this is what they've got to test. How much do we want to go to France? We've come a long way, but part of what we've got to do is show them that, you know what? Bring whatever you've got to bring. Do whatever you've got to do. We're going to France in 98. We went out. We got a 2-2 draw. Should have won the game when we were 2-1 up and conceded late. But anyway, got a draw. That helped us on the next game. We got a draw with Mexico. End up in the World Cup. Little story that I'll fast forward to. 2 days ago, I saw something, Carl, that I didn't like about what I saw about the national team. The river around the training pitch and the players and we know the jokes and this and that. Let me tell you, if that's my Wimbledon days, somebody's going head first into that water, by the way, probably the manager or one of the coaches to set the tone, and then we'd all go wading across and we'd get on with our business. In Jamaica, we would have found a way to do that. Seeing players being piggybacked 6 or 8 feet across a bit of water before you're ready to train for a game.
What would Vinnie Jones have done?
It's so important. Tells me about the state of mind. Tells me about state of mind that, you know what, your cleats are going to get wet, your socks will be a little bit wet, but guess what? You're going to play, you get on with the game and you do whatever. I said to a few people who were around me and when I saw a couple of those shots, and this isn't a slur on people's ability or their technical skills or whatever. This is just
character,
a mentality and character. That something worries me a little bit. That some of the players have already, we're down in Trinidad. Look at the pitch. Look at this. When you start to have, when you can have mental doubts, when you can start to already find a reason for why it didn't go well, it worried me, and there was just a few things there that just came flooding back to El Salvador when the helicopter was coming down and seeing people's faces and knowing that can go one or two ways with some people around that time. And it was just so disappointing last night to see players not do what was required, not put in enough effort, not give enough. And it's something that, as you say, some players are going to have to live with it and never going to go to a World Cup again. That was, right there was that opportunity.
Hey, Earl, sir, it's Jorge here. That point you were just making was something, it kind of works well with what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Basically, after the Panama game on Friday, everybody, it was such a high. We thought, we thought we were in. And it seemed like the players thought they were in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the mentality they came into yesterday, it seems like. And I just wonder from some of the other teams in CONCACAF's perspective, everyone's talking about how Trinidad had nothing to play for yesterday.
Yeah,
which
I've
they
got
didn't.
A note on that, yeah.
And
well, they have, by the way.
What I'm curious to know from you, playing for another country in CONCACAF, is is the perception of the U.S. national team that there's some arrogance sometimes that go around, and that can motivate these other teams, even if they don't have anything to play for qualifying, right?
I've got that as a note, Yeah,
so, I mean, what that means for me is, listen, there are challenges to qualifying in CONCACAF that, that what ends up happening, and if you need to look at it at a bigger sort of macro level, which is how it should be looked at right now, is missing out on Olympics and missing out on Youth World Cups. Yeah. There's a big group here that have missed the moments that matter, right?
Yeah.
So they've been through the cushy academy situation. Yeah. They've been down at Bolotary. They've gone through all of these great things. They've maybe played in college. You know, they're starting for their MLS team. Mm. You know, they're getting opportunities in Europe. Not enough of them have been blooded in situations where, you know, you have 3 days to recover for a game. And I remember when we played in the under 20 World Cup in Argentina, we played a Chile team that, I mean, talk about fight. I couldn't believe something that I wasn't exposed to enough as a player. And then the net, right, isn't cast wide enough to grab some of these hungry guys that tend to be in a sort of socioeconomic explanation of how the landscape of sports works. Like these inner city kids that fall through the cracks and pay for play. That's nothing new in the States. That's part of that Germany situation too, was they were trying to find hungrier players and not let the finances be the barrier to entry, because they were getting players that played video games and it was too easy for them. And they were losing what was the staple of German success, which was a fight, a mentality that was unwavering. And in that game, for the first time, because I think fight is definitely a part of the U.S. soccer team. It's one of the things that gets us credit. It's one of the things that worked for Jurgen Klinsmann and the World Cup that everyone likes so much. But when that leaves, when the fight's not there, then I agree with you. I looked at that performance and I thought to myself, I don't know who this team is.
Yeah, and you're 100% right. You know, when USA teams haven't qualified for the Olympics, people have kind of gone, oh, that was so disappointing. And then we've moved on. That's big. That's huge, Cal. That grouping together. That spending 6 weeks with a group of players who, like the Germans we talked of back in 2000, late 90s and 2000, you become good friends, these bonds, these things that you grow together and you want to, you know, stay with that team and you're desperate to be part of that group as it develops and goes to U21s and goes to U23s and the full national. There's some players in the US who've missed those opportunities. So when you go and play, you're right, your teams like your Costa Ricas and that, where they've got kids who've played 150 league games in tough leagues or in Mexico, and then some of the guys in the US are either playing in college, playing in MLS academies. It's a very different, a very cleaner kind of much more clinical style of football. They've missed out on the street fight, and none more so. And I was thinking a little bit about this yesterday. You know, the greatest player we've seen of the current era, Lionel Messi, had it all on him in a certain way. Yeah. And I'm going to forget the talent and the shots and the chips and the dribbles and that. There's a certain element of fight that had to come out in Lionel Messi to make sure Argentina got to a World Cup. And yes, he got the three goals, but it's almost like he took on what was required. The mentality and the mental strength to make sure he did what he did to get his nation through to World Cup finals. And it's interesting that there's certain people before the game, and again, alarm bells for me, warning signs, when people said, well, Trinidad and Tobago, they've got nothing to play for. Again, let me just slightly put on my hat of a Caribbean team who's been in the CONCACAF. Let me tell you, when we put on our jerseys, the black,
the reggae boys,
green, the reggae boys, just like you've put on the Stars and Stripes jersey and it means a lot. It means a lot to us. It's a small nation who like to kick above our weight, that have got stars in athletics, stars in music, stars in business and all kinds of medicine and that. And it's a country that's very, very proud of who we are and what we do. So it does matter to a start. There's no international game that doesn't matter for a Caribbean country or one of the smaller clubs in CONCACAF. And then the other thing I have to say is, when we go through qualification, and sometimes it's through decisions, sometimes it's through mentality, sometimes it's seeing games or playing against the two teams, we always felt that the hex was pretty much set up for Mexico and for US to make sure they get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we played them, it was our chance to say, you know what? You're not going to get this easy. You're not going to get nothing for this. And so those thoughts that you're going down to Trinidad and Tobago and they've got nothing to play for and Dennis Lawrence is just thinking about, oh, you know, getting individual. Let me tell you, there's everything to play for. And you've got USA on your patch and it's rain and you're seeing players don't want to get their cleats wet. Game on. Let's see about it. And that's the kind of mentality that they have. And it's kind of mentality, I think, that it's part of what you said has been great about the US, that fight and that drive that Jurgen Klinsmann took so well and took them as far as they went in World Cups. But you've got to understand sometimes the mentality of the opposition, that you're the big dog.
Mm-hmm.
In other areas of maybe world football, USA, the US men's national team is still playing catch-up. But in CONCACAF region, with some of the smaller nations, USA are coming to town. That's the big deal. You're the Man United. You're the Manchester City of the Premier League. You're the team that people want to beat to put a marker down. And that was what I felt came out of the game. The difference between the Panama performance and then all that we saw after that and the Trinidad performance that we saw, the mentality of understanding the opposition was completely there.
Yeah, it's a really great point, Earl. I mean, it's almost as if the U.S. are more comfortable in an underdog role than they are as the big shots. And it's tough. But, Earl, you as always help us see the light and move forward. I'm going to give you the last word because you're so good with your phrases to take us on to a more optimistic future. So what's the last word that you have for U.S. soccer fans as they try to navigate this tough period?
Is that, listen, you've talked to me about Germany, about Spain, about countries who've radically changed the way they are. Listen, there are some brilliant things in US soccer. There are some brilliant things, some things that need to stay. But there are things that need to be changed. There's things that need to be addressed that people haven't got to be afraid to ask the relevant questions. And if you don't like the answer, ask again. And if you don't like the answer, put your hand up and ask again. Until we start getting to the root of the problems, you can't brush over this. We can't soft soap this. We can't. This is an opportunity for U.S. football to grow again and take the good things and move those on and introduce some better things that's going to help us. As NBC who produced the Premier League, for MLS soccer that's going to grow, for USL soccer that's all the teams that are trying to get it into the professional game, and most importantly for the US national team and all the youth teams and structures that come underneath it. So there's hope, mate, but there's a lot of hard questioning to go first.
Ask the questions. Are you on this weekend or is it Musto?
No, Musto's on, mate. It's
amazing.
Normally,
I'm amazed that he's working. I
mean, yeah.
He's decided to come off the golf course.
He's 1 week of working. That's it.
Well, then I'm gonna lead on at least one Robbie this weekend. Let him carry me through the weekend. But thanks for letting me lean on you and all the Tad Bonners getting some great insight from Robbie Earl. I'll talk to you soon, my man.
Take care, mate.
Bye. All right, so that's Robbie Earl. I think doing a great job of giving us the perspective that is hard to have when you're too close to the game, a perspective from other fans and other teams in CONCACAF. That was one I haven't heard, and just really insightful and observant as always from Robbie Earl. And I'm gonna try to take some of his optimism, and I promise I'll raise my hand and ask those questions if you guys will too. So until next time, Tad Potters. Stay on your feet.